This is Marathon Training Academy, Episode 6.
Hello, welcome to Marathon Training Academy, found online at marathontrainingacademy.com. I'm Trevor.
This is Angie.
In this episode, Angie shares her own running story about how a regular everyday mom found the discipline and determination to complete a marathon. And for this episode's quick tip, she's going to tell you about how to prevent and treat shin splints. So, how was your run today?
It was kind of windy outside, so kind of slowed my time down. But, you know, it was good. It's always good to get out there. And in fact, one of our listeners sent us a great quote today that says, "You never regret a run, you just regret the run you never took."
Yeah, I thought that was good. So thanks, Dave from Wisconsin, for sending that in. I've been talking to him a little bit on Facebook. And we're up to, I think, 51 friends on Facebook the last time I checked. So,
wow, aren't we popular?
Well, it's kind of neat, because every time I open my computer and I go and check, there's, you know, one or two more people that have come onto the fan page. So it's kind of exciting, like Christmas every day, almost.
Yeah, and we want to encourage interaction, you know, between a running community on Facebook. I think that can be a great support for people and just a way to get your questions and comments and ideas out there.
We just want you to waste more time on the computer than you already do.
That's right.
That'll make everybody happy.
For all you Facebook addicts.
Instead of playing Farmville, you can come over and chat with us.
I did find a way to hide the Farmville application, so okay. I'm very excited about that. No offense to anyone who likes that game. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, I'm sure, but...
Yes.
I'm sure I waste time in other ways.
Yeah, I do too. So anyway, I got out and ran after you did, and I have you know that I outran a truck.
Ooh, was it moving?
Yes.
Great.
It was the mail truck.
Wow.
He had to stop at every mailbox, so I got a good lead on him.
Good for you.
Okay, so we're sitting here in our living room. Our air conditioner is not working. We just turned it on yesterday, and it must be out of Freon or something. So we're sitting here underneath the fan. The kids are over at Grandma's. It's nice and quiet in the house. So we had a couple of nice salads. Angie makes this really good vinaigrette dressing. I think my mom probably taught you.
I got the idea from her.
Okay, give them the ingredients real quick.
All right, I start with honey, and then olive oil, and balsamic vinaigrette. Shaken, not stirred.
Okay, so anyway.
Well, I had a good idea for a running shirt the other day.
Okay.
Of course, it'll only apply to a very, very small minority of the population. But I was at the YMCA and running on the treadmill. And as some of our listeners know, I'm pregnant and I'm about 13 weeks along. So I'm at the point where I've got the stomach pooch that, you know, I don't look pregnant yet. I just look like I've eaten too many jelly donuts or something.
Yeah.
So I decided I need a shirt that says running partner and that has an arrow pointing down to my stomach. You know, like people do the baby on boards, which are really cheesy, those kind of shirts.
Yeah.
So I decided that the baby is my running partner.
If you want to draw more attention to your stomach, I guess that would be
fun. Well, I thought it would be like an explanation of why my stomach is pooching out. Like, probably see me in there all the time, like, man, she's getting fatter.
Yeah. So that question that nobody dares ask.
Right.
When's the baby due?
Yeah, you really don't need to ask that unless, you know, they're like 9 months along and it's completely obvious.
I think everybody should know that. Yeah. Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way, well on my way. So Angie, we're going to get right into it. Tell us, how did you get to be so awesome?
Wow, I'm glad you think so. I definitely don't think of myself that way. You know, I really never thought of myself as an athlete. Growing up, I didn't play team sports, and I really was more comfortable with my nose in a book. And so I did take this journey kind of from an introverted teenager to a confident marathoner. And I guess I started running sporadically in high school, mostly because I wanted to lose weight. And I'm sure that resonates with a lot of, especially women, because seems like that's something that many people struggle with. And, you know, I really wasn't very serious about it. I would get these exercise kicks and run off and on. But during college, I really started running on a regular basis and enjoyed the health benefits as well as, you know, the mental and emotional edge you get from it. it can, being in college can be stressful, and it really was just a great stress relief for me. And one summer between semesters when I was home, I had the goal of running 10 miles. And I think probably the most I had gone before that point was somewhere from 3 to 5. So it was a pretty significant increase in my mileage. So several mornings a week, I'd walk down to the local high school track and started just building up my miles slowly. And I remember the morning that I ran the 10 miles. It was 40 laps around, which was pretty monotonous. But, you know, when I finished, I really felt triumphant. And kind of the glow of those 10 miles carried me through several years of running, because I looked back and thought, wow, I've run 10 miles before. But I really didn't attain or go beyond that level for several years.
Now, I remember when you were running on that track, we first met and you were still living at your parents' house in Lewistown, Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be all on that track running, and I would, you know, we were dating, and I would come and look at you through binoculars while you ran.
All right, that's scary.
I'm just kidding.
I know.
But I did meet you out there one day. You remember that?
I do, yes.
You kind of looked at me like, what are you doing? Why are you interrupting me?
Get out of here while I finish my run. Yeah, so it was always a part of my life. Running has always been important to me, but I really had never taken it to the next level. And pretty soon I graduated nursing school, you know, started working full time. We got married, had 2 kids, and then we moved from Montana to Missouri. So we had just moved to a new state, and I didn't know many people there. And it kind of felt like I needed something to give myself some purpose and to help myself settle into the area. So kind of on a whim, I ran a local 5K, you know, really didn't train for it and everything. And it was fairly painful because I pushed myself hard, but I really enjoyed the competition and actually finished 2nd in my age group. So it kind of put the idea in my head, like, wow, I could maybe do pretty well in these races if I actually took the time and trained for them. So I started training for another 5K, and then kind of naturally just set my sights on something bigger. I had been subscribing to Runner's World magazine for a few months, and I really found the stories and the articles inspiring. You know, I liked reading about the elite runners and the professional athletes in there, but I really was most inspired and encouraged by just the stories of everyday, normal people who conquered challenges in their lives and conquered great distances. And that was when I knew that I had to complete a marathon. Now, I really didn't even know any other runners at this point, especially anyone who had completed a marathon. So, you know, despite the lack of support, I went online, I read everything I could about training for a marathon, I researched races, and I settled on the Country Music Marathon in Nashville, partly because it sounded like a fun race and partly because it was a good close distance from where we lived. And, you know, my husband, thank you, Trevor, was very supportive in all this, even though he really didn't enjoy running himself. And, you know,
what husband doesn't want his wife to be active and to be fit and beautiful?
Well, I don't think it has helped my beauty any minute. I don't know. You know, but so he was wonderfully supportive. And, you know, we were on a pretty limited budget. So I say that my mom sponsored me for the marathon. She paid for the race fee. And I just went on the internet and printed off a training program and started training about 5 months before the race. And like I said, I was just kind of doing this on a whim and really didn't, you know, have a lot of education at that point. But just reading everything I could and devouring marathon training books, things like that. And so when I started training, it was winter, December, and looking back, it was really rough to run through that winter. I didn't have access to a gym or a treadmill, so I either had to get outside and run or nothing. And Trevor had to be to work, or had to leave for work at 7:15 in the morning.
Right.
So I'd have to get out and get my run in before that time to get back, so my kids were not left alone. And so some of those dark, cold mornings, it was pretty rough, you know.
Yeah, I was amazed. Sometimes you'd get up 2 hours before me to go out and run in the dark.
Yes. I found that getting out of bed was 50% of the battle.
Yeah.
Oh, that was rough. And then getting out the door was another 25% of the battle. And then the actual run came pretty naturally.
Once you got going.
Yeah.
Got your body moving.
And I was always glad that I got out there and did it. But, you know, I was running 5 to 6 days a week and, you know, ran through snow and ice and rain and wind, and I remember one run was kind of more like skating around on the ice. Probably wasn't the wisest decision, you know, at that time, but I felt like, man, I've got to stick this training program. I'm going to be really rigid about it and get this run in. So it's kind of funny to look back and some of the experiences I had.
Well, you are a Montana girl too, so
There's
an ultimate toughness factor when it comes to cold weather already built in genetically.
Yeah, that didn't bother me as much, I guess, the cold weather. But I was just an ordinary wife and mother, and I just really wanted to make this dream come true of finishing a marathon. And I was plagued by some injuries along the way. I remember a few trips to the chiropractor for some lower back spasms, and I struggled with shin splints and some knee pain and everything.
Yeah, I was amazed when we knew it was serious enough, your back was hurting so bad you need to go to a chiropractor. So we found one here in Sikeston, Missouri. And I had to help you out of the truck.
Yeah, I was in pain.
into the office, and this guy adjusted you, and then it was kind of over and done, and you walked out and didn't really complain anymore. You were just fixed.
Yeah, it was really, really helped a lot.
I don't think, you know, it's always that quick and easy just to get an adjustment and have the pain go away, but this time it was.
Yeah, fortunately, because I was like, I can't miss any runs, you know, that kind of thing, which maybe led to some of my injuries in the first place, was not having enough education and just being too rigid as being a beginner. And
well, you said you ran 5 to 6 days a week.
Right.
Which is, you don't recommend now.
I found for my body, it doesn't respond the best if I run that often. Mm-hmm. I think every person's body has a certain mileage threshold that if they push themselves over that, they're going to find that they're more prone to injuries. Mm-hmm. And so for me personally, yeah, you know, running 5 and 6 days a week is not the most optimum for my body. And, you know, later on doing another marathon, I found a training program that worked a lot better for me and everything. But, you know, during this training, even though I was having a few problems with injuries, I knew I was going to finish the race even if I had to limp the whole way.
That's the kind of determination you need.
Yeah, I was really determined. This was going to happen and everything. So, you know, I was struggling with some injuries. Shin splints was an issue with me. And that's why we want to talk about that in today's quick tip. Because it's something that can be managed and treated fairly easily if you get on it in time. So, you know, but despite kind of the injuries and things I struggled with, I knew that I was going to finish the race even if I had to limp the whole way. I was just really determined that I was going to make my dream of finishing a marathon come true.
And that's the kind of determination you need to go 26.2 miles.
Exactly. It really has to start in the mind. And you obviously have to be disciplined to finish your training program. That's a big part of it too. But if your mind is not in the right place, it's going to be a lot harder.
So what were some more built-in accountability factors for helping you complete your training? And for example, signing up for the race and just paying the fee and knowing, okay, now it's on the calendar, I've paid the money, it's non-refundable.
Exactly.
I'm going to make it work.
Yeah, I really recommend, you know, signing up for the race in advance, paying for it, because if you're thinking, some of those races are pretty expensive. I think this one was maybe $110, and I thought, you know, that's a lot of money, and I'm not just going to waste that because I can't get my butt out the door to run, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, obviously you told me, and you told all our family, you know, that I communicate with on a regular basis. So there's people that are going to keep you accountable, or maybe just the fact of telling them you're going to do it and then not doing it, you'd be embarrassing.
Yeah, for me, I'm, you know, a pretty motivated and goal-oriented person, so I really like to set goals and accomplish them. And so, yeah, telling people is definitely important, and having them asking, you know, how is your training going, or even if they think you're crazy.
Right.
Just having their awareness of it is going to increase your motivation to get out there and stick through the hard spots.
Yeah, and probably the best accountability is what you didn't have is a running partner, somebody that's also training at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the podcasts on iTunes is the Two Gomers. And these guys are funny guys, but they are both training to run a marathon, and I forget what week they're on, but it's a pretty popular podcast, I think. And they're both going through the same training, and they just call each other, I think, once a week and update their progress and talk about movies and whatever pops in their head, and then that accountability that they have with each other is a big help. And so if you got a running partner or a friend that's going to do this with you, great. If you don't, if you're just like Angie and your husband's staying in bed when you get up early to run, just go for it.
Yeah, you can still do it, but it really does help to have some kind of encouraging running community, whether it's online or whether it's a running partner you have, or just, you know, people who have the same type of goals, who understand what you're going through and can encourage you through the rough spots. I think that's really important.
Yeah, if you want to come on our Facebook page, Marathon Train Academy, just search us in Facebook. You'll find our page, and you can become a fan and come on the page there and post your goals.
Yeah, we'd love to hear what your goals are for running. You signed up for a race. You've completed a race. We'd really love to hear your running story.
Yeah, if you have questions, or if you found some good running music, or hit some kind of breakthrough or some kind of wall. We're just trying to really build up a community of, you know, encouraging, supportive runners. And, of course, Angie and I'll be in there and be there to answer any questions. Well, you don't want my answers, but she'll be... She's got the knowledge. She'll be there to answer your questions. I'll be there to say hi and chat.
That's right.
Okay.
You're supportive. That's great.
Well, take us to race day. So you went through the training program. You signed up for the marathon in Nashville, Tennessee. I took you over there. We stayed in the Motel 6. That's one regret that I had was...
Crappy motel.
Yeah. Well, we just got it back. We did like a four-day trip to the Smokies, and I rented a nice cabin. So I kind of spent the money to do that. So when it came to the marathon, that was going to be the last thing on our vacation. And I went cheap, and we've had a Motel 6, which was real kind of seedy. But
it was in a bad area town. We heard sirens all night.
Yeah.
It was, you know, balled up sheets, that kind of deal.
But it was too late to get anything near the race or anything better because it was just book solid. How many people were there for that race?
I think there was around 30,000 who were doing the marathon. So
I've never seen so many porta potties in one place,
and so many people in line in front of the porta potties too.
I know, everybody just trying to get the last drip out of them before they they start their 4-hour race.
Yeah, and I remember that morning. It was, you know, it had been raining kind of through the night. It was overcast and drizzly, and well, even getting to the race site, there was kind of a traffic jam on the freeway. I was wondering for a while if we were ever going to get there in time and everything.
I just used my great California driving skills, though, to get us in there.
Yes, you did. I'm glad I wasn't driving. That would have added to my stress level. But we had to, you know, find some shelter under a hotel awning and stand there waiting for the race to start and sip some coffee. And I was definitely nervous. But it was nice to have my supportive husband there and share his coffee and everything. And, you know, when I lined up in my race corral, it was pretty emotional. You know, there's just a lot of energy with all those runners. You know, I'd look in front of me and just as far as I could see was runners. Look behind me, it was just a whole sea of runners. Just all those people who have come together for a common goal, who have went through the intense training that it requires. You know, it was just really a feeling like no other. We're all there for a united purpose. And so that was a really amazing and inspiring. And I remember the starting gun going off. And, of course, it took a while for our corral, I think it was in corral 10, to cross the start line. But, you know, we had the chip on our shoe and everything. So then it starts recording your time once you cross the line. So you kind of shuffle along for a while and kind of a semi-walk, a jog, and... Mm-hmm. Until the crowds thin out and you can find your running stride. And, you know, I really had, throughout my training, run alone the entire time. All my long runs, everything was by myself out in the country roads. And so just being surrounded by so many different runners was really, really kind of fun for me because it really distracted me from the miles. Like just watching people and passing people and thinking, hey, I can pass that person, you know, they're either older than me or they don't look like they're in as good a shape. And so it was kind of fun to be able to play those mental games with myself. I remember around mile 13 and all the half marathoners, which the majority doing that race were half marathoners, and they veered off to finish their course. And I thought, wow, I still have half the race to go. That seems like a long way.
Right.
But I really, even though tired and I never really considered stopping, it was just enough of the excitement, and there's a lot of bands along the course to listen to and a lot of fans and everything. And I remember passing mile 20, which that was virgin territory after that for me. That was the farthest I had run in my training, was 20 miles. And, you know, it was starting to get kind of hot and humid, and I was kind of feeling worn down, but there was just people kept going, and I really just never considered giving myself the option of stopping. You know, eventually there was the finish line, and just suddenly I found this extra burst of energy and finished strong and finished in 4 hours and 10 minutes and 15 seconds. And so, you know, I really never set a specific time for me. You know, obviously my goal for my first marathon was just to finish. I think no matter how many marathons or races I run in my life, I'm always going to remember that first marathon just because it was such a breakthrough moment for me. You know, just conquering that distance really changed my life, and that's why I'm so passionate about getting the word out that you can run a marathon and you can change your life, and anyone can do it. And since then, I've learned how to train smarter, but I still think the most important ingredient to finishing a marathon is having that confidence. Now, when I ran my second marathon, I set the goal to finish in less than 4 hours, and I think I trained smarter, I visualized my success, and I was able to finish in 3 hours and 59 minutes, so that was exciting. So I think each race, each marathon that you do, you come away with some lessons, some things that you can do different next time, just more clues on what makes your body tick and everything, and I think that you can set yourself up for future success.
So does it get pretty addictive?
Yeah, I mean, there is always in the back of my mind, you know, like, you know, what race am I going to do next? And mm-hmm. Even though it's painful and it's something like there's just this amnesia that sets in. You remember the highlights. You remember the good moments. You remember just that.
The breakthroughs.
The breakthroughs. The absolute joy of crossing the finish line and just feeling like you conquered. There's a great amount of joy in it. So.
Okay, so looking back at your first race as you're preparing for it, was there any mistakes you made or things that you would do differently if you could go back?
Yeah, I think, you know, like I've said, I've learned to train smarter since then. Pretty much my first race, I focused only on running, and I ran 5 and 6 days a week. Didn't really do much cross training, didn't work on a stretching program as much. And so by the time I was ready to do my second marathon, I had been taking a yoga class a couple times a week, and focused more on building core strength, which are your, you know, your foundational muscles for your legs. So building core strength is going to help you finish strong. Having a stretching regimen where you stretch after every run, I think that really helped me. And then doing just some smart and focused cross training was really beneficial for me.
Well, excellent. And we're going to do a whole podcast episode on smart cross training to build up those core muscles. All right, Angie, well, thank you for sharing your marathon story.
You're welcome.
And hope it was inspiring to those that are listening. Now, we do want to deal with shin splints today, so give us some quick tips on dealing with and preventing the runner's worst enemy.
I don't know if it's the worst enemy, but it's very common. You know, people deal with shin splints. And there's really kind of 4 stages of injury. It starts out, stage 1, there's just kind of a vague discomfort, kind of poorly localized somewhere in your calf area, and you really feel it mostly after exercise. Now, if it progresses to stage 2, the discomfort comes on during exercise, but you're still able to run through the pain. Stage 3, if you continue training like you are without treating the pain, then it really becomes so severe that you can hardly train and it's, you know, not enjoyable at all. Stage 4, which you definitely don't want to ever get to, is when the shin splints lead to a stress fracture. So obviously you want to catch it before it becomes a major problem like that. And here are some prevention and treatment tips. Number 1, evaluate your shoes. They should have no more than 400 to 500 miles on them. So, you know, look in your training log, see how many miles are on your shoes, and replace those if you need to replace them.
Even if they still look new.
Right. The outer soles are good for usually around 800 miles before they start showing wear and breaking down. But the inner support, which is really the most important, starts breaking down after 400 to 500 miles. So, you know, you may want to replace your shoes right off the bat. Then slow down your mileage progression. It could be you're getting shin splints because you're building your mileage too quickly. They say that, you know, you should add no more than 10% to your weekly mileage. So you shouldn't be, you know, running 10 miles 1 week and then suddenly jump to 25 the next week. Your body just needs to gradually build. So build that running base and make sure you're not jumping up in your mileage level too much. Another thing would be to alternate your running surface. If you're used to running on pavement, you know, that can be kind of a harder impact. Maybe try a dirt surface, a track, some grass, a treadmill. Just try to change it up a little bit and should reduce that impact some. Also evaluate your running form. Last week we talked about perfecting your running form, and overstriding may result in shin splints. So think about whether, you know, how much your lower leg is extending beyond your knee. If you're doing that while you're running, there's a good chance that you'll develop shin splints. Another thing would be to develop a stretching routine. Sometimes tight calf muscles can exacerbate this problem, and a person may have muscle imbalances. So it's important to really stretch carefully after you run and keep those areas loose and keep them from tightening up too much. Another thing would be to apply ice to the area for about 15 to 20 minutes per session, and maybe do that 2 to 3 times a day. And that should help decrease the inflammation and swelling and help you with your pain level. If these previous treatments don't work, you may need to consider getting an orthotic shoe insert just to help support your foot better.
Okay, well, we would like to hear your running story. If you have ran a marathon or if you're training for a marathon, what gives you the inspiration and motivation to get out there and run long distance? We've been in contact with a few of our fans on our Facebook fan page, and Andres from California said he lost 60 pounds and had been encouraged by some family to run the LA Marathon, and I thought that was awesome, the way he's lost that much weight.
That is inspiring,
and has gotten into long-distance running and just has that I-can-do-it mindset.
Yeah, we heard from a listener from Italy, Constanza, and they had ran the marathon in Rome and are planning to do the Athens Marathon in October, which, you know, is the original site of when Pheidippides, way back in the day, ran the marathon distance. So I thought that was neat. And we have another fan named Anne, and she's going to be running the Boston Marathon in a couple of weeks. So
that's a big one.
Good luck to her. That's exciting.
I'm sure you're jealous of her.
Yes, definitely a goal of mine someday.
All right, so I hope that we hear back from Anne after that's over. Well, we want to hear your running story and what motivates and inspires you. So you can find us on Facebook or send a message through our website, marathontrainingacademy.com. Or if you want to just email Angie directly, it's angie@marathontrainingacademy.com. And if you would like more information on marathon training and long distance running, please visit us online. And while you're on our website, you can download the 7 Pillars of Successful Marathon Training, a free audio gift to help you get on your way. And you can also ask Angie a question or leave a comment for us. We thank you for listening to this podcast. Remember, you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way.